Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hard to Fuck. Lay it tape today. We're back.
Kill it.
Hey, this is Ray, that's Paul Rayside.
And this is Tay, Eric Taylor. Sorry with the DJ miscue there, man. Anyway, we're here on a Friday, a football Friday, with all types of stuff. You want to give us a call and check in, it's 718-664-9098. You can hit us up on the Twitter at Ray and Tay Today, and that's R-A-E. A-N-D-T-A-Y-T-O-D-A-Y. Also, the same thing for email. You want to hit us up with the questions. A lot of listeners have been emailing us, and we love it, so keep doing it. It's rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And please, always like us at Facebook. You know, and, hey, we got a good show for you. Break it down for them, Ray.
All right, here we go. So we got some breaking news we'll tell you about. We're going to review the Giants at Carolina game last night.
Woo.
We've got a college football preview, four top 25 matchups. And we're going to talk about, speaking of college, we're going to talk about our top five college quarterbacks, a couple of head scratchers. And
of
finally,
all time.
We're going to,
of all time. Don't forget to let them know
exactly.
That.
And we'll talk about our NFL predictions, preview, and fantasy implications. Some good games this weekend. Got some 2-0 teams, got some 0-2 teams, and a lot of teams in between.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, and we can, you know, jump on into it. And I got to say, I'm going to throw a softball up to Ray because I've been enjoying something for a long time, and this is part of our breaking news. And it's the greatest thing I think that's been invented. And I'll just say it has to do, well, in television in the last 20 years, besides, and some people don't like reality TV, so it definitely is one of the greatest inventions to me in the most recent years in terms of sports television. So, Ray, tell them what's new for the world
right.
of sports for some people.
So if you don't know, now you know. For the 12 million Time Warner Cable households out there, Time Warner Cable has finally signed a deal with with the NFL Network to broadcast the NFL Network. First game is going to be next week, next Thursday. So for all of you struggling Time Warner fans like me, we get the NFL Network.
Finally.
Like the famous Bart Scott said, can't wait. Boy.
And listen, let me tell you, the first thing you need to watch, NFL has this show called A Football Life. And they did a bunch of guys last year. They followed Bill Belichick for the whole season of 2009, I think. They, you know, did Bill Parcells, Walter Payton. Well, this year, they started off with Tim Tebow. It was pretty interesting, and five quarterbacks and, you know, their different attributes that they all resemble Tebow. But then they followed last season and recorded with the audio. Shout out to Steve Sable. They recorded the audio of Ray Lewis, one of the best linebackers ever for the Baltimore Ravens. And it was just riveting, fascinating television. So I recommend that's your first sit down and watch, along with NFL AM Monday through Fridays every morning just to start off 6 a.m. Eastern to start off your football day, right?
Oh,
but,
my God,
I can't even wait.
I can't even wait. I mean, today was a good day.
Shout out to Ice Cube, right?
Yeah, today was a good day. I didn't have to use my AK, and I got the NFL Network. That's
but you
crazy.
Were at the point where you were like, yo, pass me a Glock or an AK because I want
oh
some
my
freaking
God.
Football.
Oh, my God, because the thing is, if you want to watch the NFL Network, you want to go to a friend's house, but you can't impose every week on a friend. And now that the NFL extended to 15 games on Thursdays, you're thinking, all right, I could go to some friend's house, I could go out to a bar, I could do this. But, you know, when I go out, I want to hear the volume. I want to hear what the commentators say. I want to have to hear where Mike Mayock says and what Dion and what Marshall Faulk says and Mariucci. So finally, thank you. Thanks for getting heads together. And after years of misery, NFL Network on Time Warner Cable. So let's continue here with the breaking news. We also have shout-outs to the Reds and the Nats for clinching playoff berths.
Yes, sir.
All you baseball fans in Cincinnati struggling.
Go ahead, Cincinnati.
Talk about struggling. Not since the 30s, I think, was there baseball in Washington. So all you Washington Senators fans, you finally got, you know, long-suffering Senators fans. Didn't have baseball for 50 years. Now baseball comes back, and you got yourselves your Nationals going to the playoffs. So shout out
to
the Nats.
Shout out to Davey Johnson, a manager who's taken four different franchises to the playoffs, and the only other manager to do that was Billy Martin. So that's big stuff. And, you know, Davey Johnson on the local side for us New York heads, you know, used to manage the Mets. So that's big right there.
Yeah, good for Davey. And then the final news is the Melky Cabrera news. We talked about it earlier this week about how Melky qualifies to win the batting title, but he stepped back and told Major League Baseball apparently that he wants to take himself out of the running for the batting title, which statistically he would have won.
Right, and I think they sort of came to that place together, but I think morally, I think he did the right thing. A shout out to Melky, you know, he did the wrong thing by cheating, but I think he got some you know, bonus points and some cookies for doing the right thing and sort of stepping out, bowing out gracefully, which is definitely the right thing to do, you know. So I can't be upset with that, and I just think, you know, baseball has to be on the road to transparency and hopefully being clean. But, you know, they got the Hall of Fame stuff coming up, but all these guys now are coming up now. They're going to have to start to figure out what they're going to do, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to have some really quality players they're going to have to decide on, you know, for the Hall of Fame and not, you know. So
yeah, that's a topic for another episode, but I do think
you're right.
Baseball's got to take a litmus test and basically hold everybody to the same litmus and the same standard. And I think that this whole generation is going to have an asterisk by it. So we'll get into that. But yeah, you're right. Now it's been 5 years. These guys are all coming up, you know, McGuire, Sosa, Palmeiro, Bonds, Clemens, you know, people that you have some heavy, heavy suspicions, people that you have no doubt, people that you have some doubt. So all of these guys are going to come to be on their first, second, or third ballot this coming year. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's get into last night. I mean, we can't really say it was much of a game, but 36-7, the New York Giants go down to Carolina, and they shocked the world. I mean, you know, it's so funny. Everybody on NFL Network, all the guys, and even Dion told Eli after the game, hey, I got to let you know, everybody here, Mariucci, all of them, had picked the Panthers to win. I was surprised.
So did we.
We both picked the Panthers. I was surprised. I thought the Giants had a chance, but I just didn't think that they could overcome all the injuries. And so really losing Deal, Dominique Hickson, Bradshaw, and Nix, but boy, did Brown and Barton, the BB boys, stepped it up, right? I was so impressed with Barton. I did mention him as potentially a fantasy pickup for people, though, and I definitely thought Brown would do well. I thought that they could do good, but boy, did they just, I mean, he was like 5.7 yards a carry, 20 rushes for 113 yards. You know, Andre Brown is like, forget Bradshaw, I'm housing your spot, playboy.
And Bradshaw's a little fragile, so he really needs to be looking over his shoulder.
To be honest with you, I actually think let Bradshaw be in the role that he's meant to be in, which is spotting Brown now. That's what I think they should do if you want to go two backs. But to me, the way Brown was running, and like they said, he pass protects great, which is why David Wilson can't get on the field besides the fumbling. He doesn't block in pass protection. But Brown was doing everything, and even caught three receptions for 17 yards. So just a shout out to him. They, you know, he has been cut in training camps and stuff like that seven different times. So it's like a little Rocky Balboa story for Andre Brown. You got to love that, man. And the Giants defense. What did you think about the Giants defense, Ray? The way they were after Cam and disrupted him all night.
Yeah, three interceptions, 16 for 30 for Cam. Just made his life miserable. You know, and I don't know what Ron Rivera is doing down there with sometimes on offense. With now he's a defensive guy, right? But that read option that they run, and it just seemed like it wasn't working. Get off of it. Do something else. Change up the plan a little bit. But that little what they have going on.
Well, that's
on,
what's his name? Chachinsky. That's, you know, he's a coordinator.
That's his
thing,
and I guess he does have a quarterback that can run, and he's got three very capable running backs, right, in Tolbert, Jonathan Stewart when he's healthy, and D'Angelo Williams. But I don't know, you got to make adjustments, you know, against the Giants, against the Giants' defensive line, their front four. They were in the backfield all night causing havoc. You weren't getting anything. They ran.
And the Panthers have a good offensive line. They really do. They have a good offensive line. They really miss Stewart, though. I think Stewart gets screen passes, and I think he's more of a, I don't want to say a dominant runner for them, but he's sort of their go-to and main guy. So they missed him. I was surprised.
Did you see that Greg Olsen had 14 targets? I mean, he had 7 catches, but they were targeting him 14 times. That's you know, Steve Smith was only targeted 4 times. Tells you that Cam Newton had no time to sit back there and pass, and he went to his security blanket. Because remember, we were talking up Brandon LaFell, like he was going to be a good pickup potentially against a banged-up Giants secondary and figuring it might be a shootout. So one more shout-out on this game. Shout-out to Jerry Reese. You know, Ernie Accorsi was the guy for many years in New York, and obviously he did the Eli deal, and Jerry was his, you know, second in command. But look at this roster of kids that – you don't really think of
next man
as
up.
People
next
that
man
next
up.
Man up. That, but think about it from top to bottom. I mean, Hakeem Nicks was a first round pick. Fine, he had his issues at Carolina. But look at who's leading that team now. You've got Andre Brown. You've got Ramses Barton. Although Ramses was drafted a few years ago. You've got Martellus Bennett, who stepped in for the injured tight ends. You've got Victor Cruz. And the moves that he made on defense as well. But think about all those moves on offense, and you think to yourself, wow, Jerry Reese really has hit a home run. I mean, his moves have all been great moves, and they weren't these big controversial, you know, expensive free agent moves. These are guys that are somewhat under the radar, like Brown, like you said, was cut, you know, was on and off of 7 teams. This is great. This is great GMing. I mean, hats off to Reese because he's been doing a great job.
Listen, I think it's great, and I think, you know, Giants fans were in a panic when when Accorsi left, and they were like wondering what was going to happen. But he stepped up and filled it in and been a great GM. They draft so well. I mean, they're two. There, Hosley and Mosley both are stepping up as their draft picks. Wilson, Reuben Randall, I think, is going to get warmed up. He got a pass, and even Eli saying he's starting to get it together in practice. So I love that. I mean, hey, their number one and number three receiver were banged up, and then all of a sudden 4 and 5 just stepped right in like it was nothing. And basically their third running back stepped up to be their number one back this week. So that's depth. And look at all the depth of the defensive line. And, you know, give them credit for drafting, you know, Pierre Paul. I mean, that's a great pick.
Oh, yeah,
right,
that JPP in the first round.
Yeah, so
that was
a great pick. And, you know, a lot
of
teams passed him by. I bet if they redid that draft, Ray, Pierre Paul, you know, hey, he's easily a top 3, top 5 pick.
In a passing league like this, a disruptive,
oh, pass rushers
athletic,
are
dumb,
premium.
Thud pass rusher, he might go number one. I mean, quarterback is probably the number one position in pro football these days, and defensive end is number two. So if you're drafting
and then
for
everybody's
a franchise,
looking for a left tackle.
Yeah, sure.
You know. So, all right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll jump into our next segment. All righty, we'll be back at Ray and Tay today.
We're back. say, check it out. We got four. Count them. Four. One, two, three, four. Top 25 matchups.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Four top 25 matchups this week. That's rare. Especially this.
It is rare, and you
got to
love it. In the fourth week of college football, it's exciting to get some big, big games. I mean, obviously, we're going to start to get into conference play, so you'll get, some of those, teams who are, potentially ranked teams playing each other. But, this right here is going to be one of the better weeks that you're going to have in college football. And, of course, each week will get more and more exciting as, everything starts to formulate and play out in football. But let's take a look at this first game here.
Number 18, Michigan.
Who you want to look at first? You want to look
at
Michigan?
Let's go to Michigan. Yeah, number 18, Michigan, is traveling to South Bend, Indiana to play number 11, Notre Dame.
Number 10.
So that's, number 11 in some polls. But we've got Denard Robinson and his crew. They won three straight times. And so if you're a Notre Dame senior, you don't want to go 0-4 against Michigan.
Well, to me, I think it's about Robinson and what he, can do on the road. Michigan obviously had a rough start against Alabama. I don't know if this Michigan team has really – I think Notre Dame might be able to finally, break that streak because I like the quarterback, Golson, and I like their tight end. And to me, they're going to be tough to stop. I don't know if Michigan's defense, they didn't look so great. I mean, obviously it's Bama, but Bama is always a great defensive juggernaut. They're not always great offensive juggernaut. And Michigan did not look so impressive to me. I got to be honest, I got Notre Dame pulling out a close one, 24-23.
You know, as much as I don't like
I'm a Michigan fan. So this hurts me, folks.
Yeah, Manti Te'o, and I think that Notre Dame defense has got some players on it. It's got some athletes, got some legit players, and I think that Michigan is going to have a hard time. Just like they've been some close games between these two, and I think another close game, and I think ultimately Notre Dame pulls it out as well. I think Michigan's streak of three straight against Notre Dame comes to an end. And Notre Dame, as much as I hate to say it, they're looking pretty good. Looking pretty good. So let's move on to the next game where we're getting into conference rivals. So we've got the ACC and we've got number 10 Clemson traveling to number 4 Florida State.
What a matchup. I got to tell you, FSU put a whooping on Wake Forest last week. Now, granted, Wake Forest is not tough, but this Florida State team, they are like, yo, we're back. They are no joke.
Starting with the defense.
Oh, the defense is tough. I mean, their defense, and obviously the running back Thompson, who is just, he's a beast. Their defense is great. You gotta like the quarterback Manning, not related to the other Manning, the EJ Manning, but on Clemson, our boy wide receiver Sammy Watkins. If they can get him going, Clemson, that's the way to me. Clemson could go in there and pull an upset. They definitely have a lot of talent. Clemson's the type of team though. I just, they've struggled. They had some losses last year, and I don't, that they should have won. I don't know if Clemson has gotten to the point where they're going to win a big game on the road in the ACC. So for me, I'm looking at Florida State. I'm looking at some points, though. I'm definitely looking at some points, and I do like the Clemson team.
You know what? When they step on the field, that combination of Taj Boyd to Sammy Watkins is...
Well, and what about the Ellison kid?
That's
the,
deadly.
Yeah, the running back.
Yeah, and I think FSU could be upset. I mean, I think FSU's got a great defense, but these are some dynamic playmakers, and I think that if Sammy Watkins can break free into the secondary, he can do some damage. And you know what? Tight game. Let's go for Clemson on an upset. in a tight
matchup. Oh, okay, Ray. I'm mad at you. Give me a score. Uh-huh. You're taking Clemson on an upset. I need a score.
All right. I'll take Clemson on an upset, 21-20.
Ooh, kind of low scoring. I do think
Tallahassee.
Yeah, see, I think this is going to be a little bit more high scoring. I actually think it's going to be something like 35-30, Florida State. I think they're going to go back and forth. There's going to be points on the board, but I think this Florida State team is explosive. And I think you're going to see a coming out party for just their speed. Just watch their speed. And hopefully their quarterback, E.J. Manning, really just shows what he's all about this week.
Yeah, he's
so
nice.
So listen, let's jump to the third of the four great ranked games, and interesting game because Kansas State has beaten Oklahoma, I believe, was it the last two or three years? So K-State at number 16 is going to number 5, Oklahoma. What do you think about this one?
So, I like Oklahoma.
Oh, you? Huh?
I think the Sooners, and I think their running back, Damian Williams, is too much to handle. I think ultimately that this Oklahoma team is flying under the radar a little bit, and Bob Stoops is all right with that. I think that ultimately they go in there and I think it's Oklahoma at Kansas State. They go in there and they take care of business. I mean, I think they're too much. I think that the K-State team is kind of a weak number 15, and I like the quarterback and the running back combination in Oklahoma. I think they have too much. I think they win, let's say 30-20. I think it's a
well. Don't you think? And that's the thing. I think it's all about Landry Jones, and Landry Jones is got to stay healthy. But he's obviously, if he does stay healthy, a Heisman candidate. But he's got to start, to really – he hasn't been the same since 2 years ago. Landry Jones has got to put up a huge game that sort of solidifies their conference and sort of solidifies them being a top-five team. And Oklahoma – look, we all know they got defense. And so now, to me, it's about the running game, but Landry Jones – stabilizing and being the leader that he's supposed to be and potentially an NFL quarterback. So he's got a lot to prove. I actually think Oklahoma is going to pull it out as well. I'm thinking something like 28-23 OU. Go
okay.
Sooners.
Kansas State got a nice quarterback in Klein, so he'll probably keep
Oh, no. I love Colin Klein. Listen, Colin Klein. And you know what's so funny? He's a bruiser. He can run it. He throws the rock. Colin Klein is a big-time quarterback who's very athletic but strong. Strong dude. So it's going to be a good game.
Strong like bull.
I'm strong like bull.
Exactly. There
bigger,
you go.
Better, stronger, and much faster.
Huh? And
a
then we got the last
exciting.
Game of the week. Well, the last game of the top 25. That's for all you Pac-10 folks, for all you West Coast types. We got number 22 Arizona going to number 3 Oregon.
Shout out to AU.
We got Rich Rodriguez coming back with a high-powered offense. Scored 59
Wherever
points
Wherever he
last
goes,
week.
Man. He, the guy, he's a good coach.
They scored 59
he really is a good coach.
State last week. They can put up some points.
This one, to me, Oregon is too much. DeAnthony Thomas he's already got 7 touchdowns, and I think three of them are for over 30 yards or more. His breakaway speed, Oregon is the fastest team I've seen maybe in 5 to 10 years. I can't believe, when I was watching them, number one, they play fast with their freaky uniforms. You got to love it. But they just got speed on the corners. I mean, they're almost like an LSU, Alabama type speed, but maybe not as much power. I think they're a little bit more finesse. But I love this Oregon team. And for me, Ray, I don't know if Rich Rodriguez, if Arizona's just got the quality of athletes. So I'm looking at 30-17 Oregon.
Yeah, I think this game could be a shootout, and I think that Arizona's going to run out of bullets. You know how Penn State for years and I hate to say it now in this in the wake of the whole Sandusky thing, but Penn State for years was considered linebacker U, right? They would just churn out linebackers. Well, Oregon is going to be considered running back U if this keeps going, right? They got LeGarrette, they had LeGarrette Blount, and he had that unfortunate incident with the punch against Boise State or whatever, and then they had LaMichael James, and now they have this kid, Anthony Thomas. He is unbelievable. He's got big playability like those other guys before him, and maybe even more. He might be more explosive.
He's like, I'm gone.
Yeah, than LaMichael James even. He's had 7 touchdowns, all big plays. I think they said he touched the ball 24 times, and he scored on 7 of them. And his average play is like 15 yards. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. You just get him the ball, and choo, he's gone. So I think ultimately they have too many bullets in the holster, and I think that if it's a shootout, which Arizona to some degree wants, they just don't have the ammunition to win against Oregon in Oregon. So I like Oregon in the shootout. I like them big time. And just to make a clarification, you were right, Tay. It actually is K-State at Oklahoma. So
yeah. And I still think they could have won even at K-State, but I, you know, being at home, this right here, you watch, this is Landry Jones's, this is his game. This is the game that can sort of either get him back in the Heisman talk or get him in a position where people will be like, you know what, in the NFL draft, he could be maybe a first-round quarterback. I mean, he's not going to be Barkley, but people need to see Landry get back into the position of, like, is he an NFL quarterback? So this is going to be a big game for him. You know, so listen. Hey, listen. Let's take a little quick little break, and we'll get into our segment Top 5 Fridays, y'all.
Top
we'll be
five.
Right back. Ray and Tay today.
Top 5 well, segments. So
definitely. I just
want to
give a quick
ahead,
little before we start. I just got an email and talking about our top 5 segment, and everybody knows we're doing the top 5 college football quarterbacks of all time. Okay. My friend Big Mike sends in not really a question. I guess it's just a straight up statement. He feels that number 1 all time to him in college football is hands down Mike Vick.
Wow.
Now, I'm not knocking it, you know. I mean, I've seen in different lists, obviously different opinions. A lot of people have Vick in their top 10 or top 20. And, you know, Vick definitely was, you know, listen, people can say whatever they want about him with, you know, his incidents and this and that or whatever. But he was electrifying. He was a great college football player and a great quarterback, but he did not win. And so I gotta say to Big Mike, Mike Vick, definitely top 10, maybe top 20.
Maybe Big Mike is Mike Vick. You never know. He might be trying to promote himself. He might be trying to get himself some.
No. I mean, I kind of know who Big Mike is. So,
the
emailer.
You never know.
He does like Mike Vick, though.
But he was great at Virginia Tech.
I mean, shout out to the Hokies in Virginia Tech. And Mike Vick had a great career.
Well, exactly. Philly is playing at Arizona, so you never know. Mike Vick may have come to Arizona a couple days early, hijacked Big Mike's email, and tried to, you know, prop himself up. It's possible.
All right, so listen, let's do this like we normally do. We go down, counting down from 5 to 1, and we each take a turn. Why don't you start first with your number 5, and I know you and me and you were both the same. It was hard to pick just 5, so we both probably have like a tie or an honorable mention. But why don't you go ahead and break it down, top 5 college football quarterbacks of all time.
Exactly.
Break it down,
real quick, I thought about people who won on the field in tough conferences and either won a national championship or won a Heisman or preferably both. So those are my criteria. So winning on the field, individual excellence, and team achievement. At 5, I have a tie, but, you know, an honorable mention is Doug Flutie. So He won the Heisman Trophy. He left college as the leading passer. He lost 10 games, though. He was 30-10-1. And, Tay, remember, I was at your house the day after Thanksgiving eating some turkey leftovers when he had that pass in the Orange Bowl to Phelan, and they beat the Miami Hurricanes. So Doug Flutie is my honorable mention number six, but my number five is Charlie Ward. This cat at Florida State was electric. He was 23-2 as a starter, which is impressive, but he won the Heisman Trophy in 93. He won the national championship in 93. The only knock on him was he didn't play huge in that national championship game when they beat Nebraska 18-16 to win his national championship in 93. He actually had a bad game. So that people point to that.
But also, let's be honest, Nebraska also had a great defense.
Yeah, they both. I mean, that was a great, you know, Florida State, Nebraska, 1993 was about as good as it gets. I mean, those two teams wasn't a great game, if you recall, but those two teams were at the top of their game. And we'll get back to that a little bit later. But my guy at number five is Charlie Ward.
To be a little bit different, you know, I got to say it's hard for me because, you know, obviously we both grew up the same time and have, you know, different, you know, the same sort of experiences and even saw some of the games together. I have, an honorable mention, and actually for me, I guess I have two honorable mentions. But I gotta say straight up, I'm gonna go with my honorable mention first is definitely Jim Plunkett. Okay, Jim Plunkett to me was, I mean, not just, you know, obviously they had a big win over Ohio State Buckeye 27-17. Back when, you know, Ohio State was heavily favored in the Rose Bowl in 1970. But Jim Plunkett, he was just a winner and at the same time was the type of leader that people forget. He was big at the Patriots and the Raiders. But in college, Plunkett was the man, you know. I mean, Plunkett is arguably, you know, some people might feel he's one of the best college football quarterbacks. But he was great at Stanford, and, you know, I think for me he was probably one of the better quarterbacks the Stanford's ever had, besides, you know, the two most recent, Elway and Luck. So I got to go number five. I got to go with my man, the Heisman Trophy winner, Roger Staubach. Okay, he did his thing, won the Heisman Trophy. Talk about great conferences. But to do what he did at the Naval Academy just says so much. And then just the type of the man he was on and off the field. Roger was a good guy. He led the Dallas Cowboys to do so much, and he's a Super Bowl winner. But at Navy, Roger threw it. He ran it. He did everything. And he brought the team. They didn't win a national championship. But the way in the 60s that he sort of led that team, late 60s, early 70s, Roger Staubach is, to me, hands down, one of the best college football quarterbacks, and then, again, one of the best quarterbacks, period, we've ever seen. So who you got at number four?
So number four for me is a Texas Longhorn, and his name is Vince Young. 30-2 in 3 years. Didn't win the Heisman. But he fell a little bit short to Reggie Bush in the Heisman, but he beat Reggie Bush and USC in that crazy, crazy Rose Bowl. And
what a game.
He had the best big game performance in college football history, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He ran for 200 yards. He passed for 267 yards. So that's 467 yards. Three rushing touchdowns, 41-38. He scored the final touchdown, beat Malaluga to the pylon with 9 seconds to go against a phenomenal USC team.
It was so clutch.
That really, if they had won that, they would have won three in a row. That would have been two BCS and one non-BCS, where they essentially, you know, split it with LSU, Saban's year at LSU in 04. But that was an unbelievable USC team, and Vince Young single-handedly took them apart. So even though he didn't win the Heisman, he was 30-2 as a starter and had an unbelievable game when it was all on the line and won the Longhorns a national championship. So who's your number four?
Well, it's funny because I hate this, you know, I know this is just putting in so much to the pot, but it's the guys that you just actually mentioned. My four was a tie, and it's between Charlie Ward and Vince Young. Two things, and I'll break it down. Obviously, you gave the stats of that game, but to me, Vince Young, the way he led the Texas Longhorns, it was also in that conference. This was when the Big 12 was really tough, not just Texas, but Kansas was better that year, Oklahoma, Kansas State, Texas, A&M. To me, Vince Young, in that game, you just felt like you saw a coming of age that was incredible. Because in college, when you are on the highest stage in the big moment and you come through and win like that, and there was no fluke, nothing lucky about it, he dominated on that field like he was a man, and Leinart and USC and other guys were boys. Even as big as Lendell White is and was, when you saw Vince Young do what he did, passing, running, and he did have some good passing yards and clutch first downs, you know, over the middle passes.
It was the best performance I've ever seen.
I was blown away to the point where I was just like, there was no way that I thought that he'd be where he is right now, and that's sadly, you know, with the new report coming out that he said he was financially broke and out of the league, you know, getting cut with, you know, trying to be a backup quarterback at Buffalo. And it's just sad. But honestly, Vince Young, but then the other tie four is Charlie Ward. Charlie Ward should have been drafted by the Jets. Charlie Ward should have been a first-round pick. He never should have been point guard for the New York Knicks, dribbling the ball up the court on his tippy toes and all that foolishness. I mentioned that just because you already broke down a lot of the stats. But Charlie Ward, to me, I saw him live with my own eyes at the University of Maryland at College Park. Florida State had just came into the conference, and he came to Bird Stadium, and he ate us up alive. I don't remember the score. It was probably in the 40s to the teens, but Charlie Ward could throw the rock anywhere. And it's just a shame because he could have been a Drew Brees. He could have been a Mike Vick, all these different guys. He was only 6 feet. But Charlie Ward was a legitimate quarterback, ladies and gentlemen. And it might be hard for you to believe, and you have to watch the tapes, but Charlie Ward was an NFL quarterback, not just a college quarterback, an NFL quarterback. And it is a shame because I would have loved to seen him, you know, fulfill that, manifest that dream and just do what he, I think, would have had a good career. But
that's one that you really hate that basketball took him away from football, because he was okay at Florida State, he and Bobby Sura in the backcourt, but you wanted to see him as a football player. All right,
he was a difference maker. So let's go ahead, let's keep it moving, go to number three.
Let's keep
who
it
you
moving.
Rocking
yeah,
with?
So my number three, it's funny that we're talking about USC and Vince Young and everything. My number three is Matt Leinart. And the numbers
Boo.
That this guy put up, you're booing me. this dude was 37-2 as a starter. Now, granted, he had a ton of talent on his team, and he had Mike Williams, and he had Reggie Bush, and he had a great defense. But he himself.
And Lendell White.
He himself threw for 64% completion, 10,600 yards, 99 touchdowns. He won the Heisman in 04. He actually had better numbers in 05 and lost out to Vince Young, I guess, was second, and he was third. Reggie Bush won it, in fact, gave it back and that whole thing. But he, if it weren't for Vince Young and his unbelievable performance, this guy would have had three national championships. So, to me, going 2-1 in national championship games, 37-2 as a starter, he's my number three overall.
Even though I still think of the you know, recent USC quarterback run, I think Carson Palmer was better than him.
Carson Palmer is a better
NFL
quarterback.
I just think,
in terms of physical skills, but in terms of what you did on the field, performance for the Trojans.
I agree with you in that sense. I just think Leinart had much more toys and weapons. That's what I'm saying.
Probably.
Carson
Pete Carroll
didn't
was able to recruit some real studs.
Yeah, no. Well, listen, hey, my number three, I got to go back to the little guy, Boston College's own Doug Flutie.
Doug Flutie,
we watched the game, threw the Hail Mary touchdown pass. But what I liked about Doug Flutie is he made BC a football power. You know, I mean, late 80s, early 90s, he sort of solidified that program to where BC could be a big team in the Big East and then go on to the ACC, where Boston College has, you know, sort of become what they have been over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. Doug Flutie in college, and I guess it's just trying to explain it for people who didn't see it, right? Because, you know, people who saw it, they know. But for, you know, young listeners out there and some other people who don't know the game, Doug Flutie was little.
5'9".
It was incredible when he made every throw on the football field. He could do the straight, you know, Hail Mary bomb, which he did. He could throw the down and out 15 yards. He could throw the, you know, the slants, the cross patterns. You know, he'd throw it over the middle deep. You know, Flutie was incredible and athletic. He wasn't just like little like Breeze. You know, he was like Breeze, but even a little bit more athletic. So to me, Doug Flutie was a talent. You know, he had his brother who played college football as a wide receiver. You know, people don't remember that. But I love Doug Flutie and what he did at Boston College and just how he changed a program. You know?
All right.
That was my number three, clear cut.
So my number two, I had a hard time between two and one. But for number two,
the same guys, I think.
I went with Tim Tebow. And he was a two-time national champion. Now, of course, Chris Leak was the starter as a freshman in 06, but he won it all on his back in 08. So give him 1.5 national championships. 35-6 as a starter, 145 touchdowns, 88 passing touchdowns, which in and of itself is very impressive. 57 rushing touchdowns. That's more than Herschel Walker. That is the most rushing touchdowns of anybody in the SEC. Unbelievable. And won a Heisman Trophy in 07 as a sophomore. No sophomore had ever won the Heisman Trophy before Tebow. So to me, number two, you could say all you want about the statistics, but this guy was just a natural-born leader. He walks on the field. You love him. You hate him. He leads his teams, and especially in college, he was an unbelievable force. And, you know, to me, he's sort of like the Christian Laettner, if you want to do the basketball analogy, of a great, great college player that may or may not, you know, have much of a pro career. And all of these guys, in fact, you know, if you look at it, all of these guys are never going to reach their potential accolades in the pros that they had in college. But, yeah, for now, Tim Tebow to me, number two. Who's your number
two? Yeah, well, we got to definitely keep it moving. For me, I'm just going to say quickly, for me at number two, it was close. I almost had the same guy you had, but I think we just have it reversed. I had Tommy Frazier at Nebraska. Tommy Frazier was an incredible, incredible leader, winner, you know, in 1994 and in 95, Nebraska was dominant. You know, he... If you didn't see it, you wouldn't even know. But I mean, he was their everything. Tommy Frazier rushed. He passed. He won the vote most valuable player in the Orange Bowl. You know, both those years, and
MVPs. The guy went to three national championship games.
Well, I know, but he was the first one since Johnny Unitas to win two of the Orange Bowl MVP awards.
Yeah.
So and then.
Three national championship games, and in all three games, even in a loss, he was 2-1, but he was still the MVP. So,
well, in the Fiesta Bowl, in '96, he was the MVP. And see, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, Tebow just edges him out for me at number one. But, you know, we'll go on. But he's obviously your number one. So, I'll let you take it back, and then I'll tell you why I felt Tebow was my number one. But go ahead. So.
Right. So Tommy Frazier, to me, real quick, 33-3 as a starter, but
yep.
but never, you know, he didn't even throw for 50%. Completion, but that's a running quarterback, right? He ran, he threw, and to me, he himself didn't win a Heisman, but he led a 95 Nebraska team, which may have been the best team ever. I mean, there's a couple others in the running, and like I said, he brought his teams to 3 national championship games, and 3 times he was the best player on the field in the national championship game. This guy's unbelievable.
And that summed it all up for me right there.
Yeah, and so you got number one at Tebow.
Well, for me, I got Tebow. I mean, obviously, I think one of the most impressive things you said was all the touchdowns. But to me, also, he had a high completion percent. I think his completion percentage is close to 70%. But to me, Tebow, what I loved about the guy is that even when they lost that game to South Carolina, and he apologized and said, "You'll never see anybody work, practice, try as hard as me. I promise you."
Mississippi State, like, I thought it was. Yeah.
Mississippi State?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but just the way that, you know, nobody does that. Nobody, and it has nothing to do with just his faith or his religion. It has to do with his heart and the dedication, not just the way he lifts, but his work ethic and his way that he leads men and young men. Tim Tebow in college, there was no way that he was going to lose. That's how he played the game. He threw a lot of passes. He ran the ball, the spread option. And this is the thing that I think was most important to me that I noticed about it and about Tim Tebow. He did it in an era and in a time where the SEC is just what it is now, the most dominant conference in the NFL. I was going to say the NFL because it is.
Yeah, in college.
But they put the most NFL players into the league. But in college football, the SEC is the most dominant and has
six
the
best
defenses.
Six
straight national
champions.
Yeah, and he did this against Georgia, Auburn, LSU, Alabama. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, South Carolina wasn't great yet, but these teams, Tennessee, was still, you know, pretty good then. So, to me, he did it against the best competition.
Right,
so,
and the
you know,
apology
hey,
was
we leave it at
fist.
That.
The apology
you
was
know, we
got to
get into these NFL games. I definitely think the top five is fascinating, and, you know, we want you to check out next Friday's top five. It will definitely be interesting and juicy. Hey, listen, we both had Frazier and Tebow exchange at 1 and 2, so... You know, you can always email us at rayandtatetoday@gmail.com and tell us your top 5 college football quarterbacks. But let's jump into Sunday's games, man. I mean, honestly, right off the bat, the NFL Week 3, where they pay for the play. I got to say, straight up, Eagles at Arizona here in my backyard. The Cardinals are at home. Shout out to Kevin Cobb, whose wife is, due soon, any minute, having a baby. But Kevin Cobb better show up and play, because if he's not at the game and Skelton might not be healthy, I'm going to tell you, this young kid, Ryan Lindley, will jump in, and neither one of those guys will see the field again, because all this kid needs is a chance. And it's a rough game and it's a rough business, but the NFL is harsh. If you don't play, you could lose your job like that. And I think the Cardinals, do you smell an upset?
Do you?
I smell something. But actually, I'm picking the Eagles, and I'll tell you why. I don't think the Eagles – this is what the Cardinals need to do. They need to turn them over, and they are losing – they're missing their center. Macklin is ruled out, so look for the tight ends to step up. But I just think that the Cardinals are going to give them all they can handle, and I think the Eagles pull out a close one, 28-26. Eagles beat the Cardinals.
See, I think that I think the Cinderella story ends here. I think ultimately you can't go very far in this league with any of the Cardinals quarterbacks, whether it's Cobb or Skelton or anybody. And I think that Philadelphia, you could look at it as glasses half full, glasses half empty. I think the glasses half full. Philadelphia's 2-0 despite turning it over 9 times. Usually if you lose the turnover battle, you lose. So I think Philly puts it together. I think they go out. I think they win big. They might stumble in the first half. I think they run away with it in the second half. I think Philly wins by 10.
Okay. Well, the one thing I will say that's carrying the Eagles, we both know this, is they have a great defense. And
yeah.
they give up the ball, but they get some turnovers. So look out for that. But the one thing I will say that I got to say, I don't know if your boy Massimo or whatever, if he can handle the Cardinals receivers, whether it's Roberts or Fitzgerald. So that's going to be an interesting thing. So then next up, another 2-0 battle we got, Ray. The Atlanta Falcons head out to San Diego to play the Superchargers.
San Diego. Superchargers.
San Diego. I'm going to say for me, I think the Falcons are ready to take the next step. And I think on the road, Matt Ryan, and they're actually, I bet you, going to rely on Turner more than they have in the first two games. I think Turner finally gets his first 100-yard game. And I think the Falcons play some tough ball against the Chargers. And I think they pull out a close one, 27-23, the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay.
The Chargers still a little banged up. I don't know. Matthews might play. Gates has been hurt, but he's supposed to play. But I just think the Falcons have a little something special for the Chargers, although I'm rooting for Phillip Rivers. That's my fantasy quarterback.
I got Malcolm Floyd on my team, so we need Malcolm Floyd to deliver. But I think that, first of all, it's not 100% sure that Michael Turner is going to play with that whole DUI, but assuming he does, I think that...
They're not having suspended him or anything. He's going to play.
Okay. Well, it's still Friday, but okay. I like San Diego in this game. I think it's a very close game. I think Atlanta is about as complete a team, short of the Niners, as there is. I think they can... That team can travel, although they're most deadly at home. So I think they'll give San Diego all they can handle. But I think ultimately, if it comes down to a close game and Phillip Rivers has the ball, last possession of the game, I think he drives the ball down the field, and I think San Diego wins a close one. But I like San Diego at home, but in a very, very tight game.
All right. Well, listen, the battle of 0-2 teams now. And this is funny because you wouldn't think either one of these teams would be 0-2. You have the Chiefs, KC, going to New Orleans, and our boy Stacey Manley's down there on a business trip down to New Orleans. But I think this one is really hard. Spread-wise, I don't know if the Saints are going to cover the spread, I would say, KC. But just physically the game, I think New Orleans rights the ship. I do think KC can run all over the Saints, and that's their chance to win. I do think it's going to be a dogfight. I just think at the end of the day, Drew Brees is going to spread them out. I mean, Colston's been having his problems with injuries, but I think he might, be able to go. But I think Jimmy Graham, Lance Moore, and Darren Sproles. Yeah, well, listen, I got Graham, too, in one of my leagues, but I got Drew Brees, and I have Sproles. And I think Darren Sproles is going to have one of those big games, along with Pierre Thomas running the ball. I just think the Saints pull this one out. 28-23, the Saints beat the Chiefs.
I think this game comes down to style. I think if Kansas City can take the air out of the ball and take two possessions away from Drew Brees, either by turnover or just dominating time of possession on the ground, that Kansas City has a chance. I don't think, however, it's going to happen. So I think that New Orleans is just going to take out all of their frustrations about being 0-2, their frustrations with Roger Goodell, their frustrations with, Sean Payton not being there. And I think that New Orleans puts it together and has a big game. I think for the home fans, they have a big game. I think they score 35, 38 points. I think they hold KC to the 21, 24 points, something like that. So I look for New Orleans to put it on them big time.
The one thing I can say about KC where they could shock the world is if Matt Castle winds up having a game where he has no turnovers and sort of has one of those big, big games. Because they do have some explosive talent with Moriaki, McCluster, Bo, John Baldwin,
sure.
And Breston. So KC, if they could pull it together, they could shock the world and get an upset. So just keep an eye on that. Then we go to the Houston Texans against the Sheriff, who's now left Indianapolis and gone to Denver, Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. This one is tough. I mean, you would think Denver's going to bounce back after the Atlanta loss. But listen, folks, They are playing against a Wade Phillips defense. Peyton Manning has destroyed the Houston Texans in the past, but this is not the same Houston Texans. I think Houston goes into Denver to Mile High, and I don't know if they can stop Arian Foster. I think Foster and Tate are going to have a parade running on them. I think it's going to be a tight game. I don't think it's going to be that high scoring. I think Houston wins in a very close game, 23-20 over Denver. And I just don't know if Denver can really get explosive. They're going to have McGahee's going to have a rough time running it.
Yeah, I think ultimately it's similar to, you know, the college game we talked about. I think that Denver doesn't have enough bullets in the holster. I think Houston is too well-oiled a machine. I think they can score 24. Their game travels. They run. They pass. They've got Matt Schaub and Johnson and that manimal from Tennessee, Arian Foster. I think ultimately Houston's got too much ammunition, and I don't think I'm starting to question if Denver can dial it up. And Denver can score 30, you know, can score in the 30s if they need to. So to me,
you're trying to say Foster's a number one stunner.
Yeah, he's a killer. So yeah, I look for Houston to take care of business in Denver. So let's go to the game of the week potentially, not by record because both of these teams are 1-1.
Yeah.
But New England.
Well,
at
just think
Baltimore.
About this. Imagine this, right? New England at Baltimore, but imagine the losers 1-2. Oof, that's what's scary. And
that's
I hate to say it.
For home field
it's not a good
playoff.
Look. For me, I look at it like this. I just think it's payback time. I think the way that they lost in New England, it put a taste in Ray Lewis's mouth. And I know they don't have Suggs, but they got Lewis and Reed and Nada. And I just think Joe Flacco got such a confidence outplaying Brady in that game. And I think the Patriots are going through some, you know, some different issues. They're going to miss one of their tight ends in Hernandez. They just signed Branch and Winslow. But I think right now, even though they're starting to run the ball better with Ridley, you're not going to run it on the Ravens the same way. I think the Baltimore Ravens are ready to just rip through. And I'm not a Raven guy. Trust me. I think the Ravens are going to put something on New England. I think where people don't realize the Patriots defense has gotten a little bit better, and I don't think Ray Rice will have a big game running, but I think Ray Rice will have a big game in the screen game.
Okay.
So to me, I look for a close one, but I look for the Ravens pulling it out 26-24.
See, I think New England comes in and wins in Baltimore. I think this is exactly when Bill Belichick pulls a rabbit out of the hat. When his team looks like they're down, they didn't play well, they played fine in week one, didn't play well in week two, and I think this is where he pulls a rabbit out of his hat, where he schemes his way to a couple of turnovers, his offense moves the ball, his defense holds Baltimore in check, they incorporate, their old-time Branch and their new Kellen Winslow toys, and I think that New England knows that Baltimore can punch them in the mouth, and I think they remember the playoff game of 3 years ago and the fact that Baltimore outplayed them and should have gone to the Super Bowl. So I think New England's not taking anybody lightly, and I think they go in there and they win the game. I think that ultimately Bill Belichick out-coaches Harbaugh and pulls a rabbit out of his hat, and they go to 2-1, and the Ravens go to 1-2.
Really? Are you not concerned about them not having Hernandez? Just whether
I'm always
or not
concerned
that...
about injuries, and especially a guy like Aaron Hernandez. But you still have Gronk, and you still have Welker, who they will have to start incorporating and put all this nonsense aside. I think
are they going to be stubborn though? Because Bill Belichick's
pretty
stubborn,
I think
man.
It's all about winning games. It's all about winning games.
You're not going to rely on Julian Edelman.
Julian was a hero to most. No, he'll get his, but I think that ultimately they'll realize. Look, even if he's just there for 1 year and $9 million, Wes Welker's our guy.
All right, y'all. That's the Friday picks. You know,
yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. I think the Ravens are going to pull it out. Of course, I got to say my Steelers are going to beat the Ravens, and I think the Jets will beat the Dolphins.
Yeah.
The Raiders. Steelers will beat the Raiders.
We got to wrap it up this week. So thanks for listening. We had a great time. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. We got an early show, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, thanks for talking sports with Ray and Tay today. See you on Monday.
We're out.
Hey, yo. It's E Complete. I'm back up in this PC. My second album, Truth Speaker. And this track right here is crazy. I'm back. I took control, cause I knew Santa Claus couldn't save my soul. If you had the cars that I had to hold since I was 9 years old, trust me when I tell you, the next year is full. More than just bold, bullets over Broadway. It went down, the Harlem Broadway. Pops were shot.